And we're live on Augusta Free Press. I am Chris Graham. I'm joined by Rod Mullins. And Rod, we're going to talk about the NASCAR All-Star Race in Bristol last night, Wednesday night. And Rod was there live on the scene reporting for Augusta Free Press. And so, Rod, yeah, we know Chase Elliott won. He had a dominant race, won the stages 2 and 3, and he ends up bringing home the victory. But it's, first, I want to talk just – I want to get your – I want to live through you, if I can, get your sense of what it was like to be there at that racetrack last night with, close to 30,000 fans in attendance. Just describe the night. Tell us how it was like to be there.
Very busy. I think that was probably one thing that I have to make note of that's coming away from it, because I left Wise in plenty of time yesterday evening to get down there, but it was very crowded when I got down there. It seemed like there were a lot of people that were there. They were anxious to get in. They were anxious to get in to see this race, to see what was going on. And I have to say this, there were a lot of people that weren't from there. I mean, there were probably some that were, but I didn't hear of a lot of people being local that was there for the race. There were a lot of people that had come in from some different parts of the United States in for this race, and I was really impressed with that. I'd seen some tags pulling into the parking lot in Minnesota. That was one of them that I saw. I know that there had been some local media that had interviewed someone from California in preparation for this. So there were a lot of people that had made their way to Bristol for this event, and I think the estimate right now, Bristol Motor Speedway doesn't give any official totals on the attendance or anything. But what they kind of came up with last night was somewhere around 20 to maybe 22,000 people is what they estimated. Still, it's the biggest crowd in North America to attend a sporting event since all this stuff has happened. And it was just seemed like it was a very busy night. There were a lot of things going on. Of course, you had the Open that took place, and then you had the actual All-Star race itself later on. But all in all, it was a busy evening. It's what it seemed like. Everything was going very fast as it just progressed on into the evening.
I'm interviewing you about the everything about the night first, as much as I am. We'll talk an analysis about the race. I'm curious as to we could see on TV, folks seem pretty spread out. I mean, as you mentioned, 20 to 22,000 in that facility. That's a cavernous facility to hold that many people, so they could easily spread out. But that's what we saw on the TV shots. What was it like? I mean, how was it, when you walked up? And, I mean, just maybe explain to our viewers out there, our listeners, just what it was like, entering facility. You're the first person I know who's been to a live sporting event since I left Greensboro, the ACC tournament back in March. Right. And it's a new world. And this may be a way forward for sports to happen this fall with fans in attendance.
Well, the first thing that was prevalent, I guess, when I came there on the facility was you had to have a mask on. When you entered the facility, even though I was in the car and I was picking up my parking pass and things like that of what I needed to do, I had to have a mask on when I interacted with people. Now, maybe some of the fans weren't doing that. Some of the fans didn't have masks on, but they were required to have masks on outside. Now, did I see a whole lot of people with masks on that were visiting memorabilia tables and things like that? No, I didn't see a whole lot of people with masks on, but primarily the majority that I did see had a lot of masks on. They had masks, and they could have gone by the local grocery store chain that sponsors Food City. They could have got one of these for like $5, I think is what they could have got. And, they could have made do. I know that there was a couple of purchases made at a local convenience store right there, people going in buying 5 masks all at once to get ready for the race. But once I got into the facility and everything, I can't say enough about the people at Bristol Motor Speedway. They knew this was a big event. They wanted this to be a big event, and they wanted to really showcase the area more than anything else of, hey, we're prepared here more than anything. To host something of this magnitude in such short notice. I mean, since the announcement had been made, it had been something like 4 weeks. And I think Bristol Motor Speedway went above and beyond in trying to accommodate the fans and also trying to accommodate the media as well, those people that were there and that were allowed to be there for the event. And then once I got into the suite, I was pretty much social distancing. I had to social distance myself, much like a lot of the people around the track. Now, if you looked over on the front stretch, and that was from where I was at, I was on the back stretch. But if you looked over on the front stretch where it says the world's fastest half mile across the top there, people were very, very much paying attention to the social distancing. One of the things that one of the reporters told me up in the suite was, isn't this, unique in the fact that you could buy a whole, pack of tickets all together, maybe for 8 to 10 people or something, and then you could sit together because you know each other, or at least you've gone through all this, but then you are 2 or 3, 4 rows away from someone else that's there that's sitting in that section, and everybody is far apart. But now, I don't know if the camera really showed it as much on the live Fox Sports 1 broadcast last night, but on the back stretch, as I looked down, sometimes it was pretty thick. There were a lot of people there on the back stretch there, and they were trying to at least practice some social distancing, but a lot of people were there on top of each other, and they were enjoying themselves, and that was the whole point of having this thing. It was a thing to have some kind of an enjoyment and a chance to maybe get out and enjoy a spectator sport for the first time outside of watching it on television. That's the way I viewed it.
I know there's at least a few sports writers probably watching right now. I'm curious what the press box was like. The suite, there was a suite reserved for you guys. What was that like? What were the protocols in there?
We were just trying to, more than anything else, we were following the protocols, but we were just trying to figure out, how we're going to cover this, how everything's going to be covered with it. This is the thing that it's going to take some getting used to. I talked with the gentleman who's the director of communications at Charlotte Motor Speedway, Scott Cooper, and he was up in the press box last night. And one of the things he talked about, he says, if you haven't already got yourself familiar with the way we're doing things now, he said, this is kind of a test. It's a hybrid sort of thing. During a race, we usually get handouts from the media staff there at the racetrack. And if you've gone through the first stage, or maybe you've gone through the first 100 laps the way that it used to be, they would go and they'd hand out, after 100 laps, they'd hand out a little handout for you to be able to track people and see how they've been doing. Well, that's non-existent now. That's non-existent, or at least it was at Bristol last night. They told us of what particular website to go to through NASCAR to where we could get this information. They're going paperless, and that's less, as Scott Cooper said, for people to come in contact with that they can pass germs if they are possibly carrying COVID-19 and they don't know anything about it. They're trying to reduce at least one thing, protecting the environment. That's one thing you're wanting to do, less paper. The second thing is trying to reduce the amount of contamination, so to speak, with all those things. The next thing was the interviews. And I think the interviews were, it's been this way since we went back to racing back in May. But we're doing Zoom interviews now. We've got Kyle Busch that comes in. Kyle Busch finished second last night at the race. Kyle Busch goes to the infield media center. He is interviewed there. There's some questions that are asked to him, but most of the people that were asking questions were doing everything through Zoom. And so you had all these different sports writers that were on there. We didn't really have to worry about it. They had a computer that was set up for us to be able to follow up there in the suite. So we didn't really have to go to it unless we wanted to. But it was just so interesting last night to see now that there's this emphasis on kind of no paper, going more to a paperless type of society, if you want to call it that, or sport, and making it a little bit more, I think, accessible, so to speak. But it's not, I guess, exactly of having that person right in front of you and being able to interview and ask those questions like we used to do a year or so ago when I was at Bristol. And all you had to do is pretty much raise your hand up and they come over with the microphone. You can ask a question right there in person and you could mingle with the drivers. This is all a very protective sort of environment. I felt like we were protected. We were told to keep our mask on at all.
Hey, Rob, you lost your sound there.
Do that. And other than that, that was about all. We kind of took care of ourselves and everything went kind of according to plan.
you know, all these changes are things I've supported in some ways for years anyway. All the paper they give you at these events, I don't know how many. I counted it up one time. I think it was the Orange Bowl or ACC Championship game I covered last winter. You know, they give you two pieces of paper every quarter. Then at halftime, they give you more. And then they give you quotes. And they just give you paper, paper, paper. And then there's 100 sports writers in there. And you think, how many trees died to give me right. the information that's on this computer anyway? Then they ask you,
It's one of those things too, and I don't mean it in a bad way and stuff, but it's a lot of the stuff about the paper and everything. It's forcing a lot of these journalists who are around today to kind of conform to the new norm is what it's going to be and stuff, because you have some sports writers, and I don't mean to say this bad about anybody in the fact, but some sports writers are still in the dinosaur age, so to speak. They're back in the Flintstone time of where they want that information right in front of them. They want it all typed out. That's the big thing that I've noticed that is really going different for a lot of these writers.
Well, when I'm covering a game, statbroadcast.com is used by most college sports teams. And the information is actually 10 times better there anyway. And then from the interview standpoint, you have to then go down a set of bleachers or go through elevators and down, you know, up and down everything to get to the interview room. I would much rather be sitting at my computer watching it on Zoom, being able to type a question and send it to them. And if they don't use mine, great. If they don't, that's okay too. As long as I get the answer to my specific question, if somebody else asks it, that's great. And then I'm right there instead of having to trudge here and trudge there. And then, yeah, oh, by the way, that actually, it's not going to just prevent in the here and now COVID. Think about when flu is at its worst. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, for me as a football writer and a basketball writer, it's during football and basketball season. So if it can lessen the spread of flu and also keep us from cutting down trees, these are all good things as far as I'm concerned. I'm glad to hear that that's what you saw last night.
Well, and I've been a proponent for this for a long time of doing something. If you've got the technology and you're capable of doing it, hey, have fun and enjoy it. And I'm just going to tell you right now, even though we were doing the audio podcast to begin with, I really like doing this now. I like doing Zoom, and I've sat in on a couple of the Zoom meetings after a race. I didn't have to participate, but I could sit there and watch if I wanted to. I really liked it. I think the only thing that probably would be better, you know, that's one thing that they're going to have to think about is opening up the pipeline, so to speak, to where all these sports writers can get in there, because sometimes we get some very jumbled communications there because of the way that the internet is going or the network is going, people getting in, people dropping off. They're going to have to make some exceptions about it, and I think they'll do that over time. It's just going to take a little while to do it, but hey, we're also seeing this as a kind of a new push, and it's almost in a way, if you're not adaptive to the current situation in sports and the way things are changing, you're almost going to be left behind because, you know, I mentioned that thing about the dinosaur age. Some of these sports writers, you know, they've been there for a long, long time. They're very knowledgeable about these things, but some of them haven't changed with the times. And I hate to say that that's one of those things that maybe the sport is trying to do in attracting a new audience. I don't know if that's one of the things they're trying to do with it, but there it is. I mean, you've got some older ones, older journalists that are out there that love what they do, but they haven't quite adapted to this sort of thing yet. And it's sort of almost we're going toward this kind of thing in the journalism world. It's almost a DIY, a do-it-yourself sort of thing when it comes to things. They're putting more trust in people maybe off the street that come in and have at least decent credentials or at least someone that can prove themselves credential wise and letting them cover something. But that's where you also open yourself up to getting a situation of someone that doesn't know how things properly run inside maybe the NASCAR world or the NFL world, how they have operated for years. But again, it's a work in progress.
Yeah, I've been fighting that battle since 2005 when I was already a veteran journalist, whatever that might be, for mainstream newspapers. And then we started Augusta Free Press 2002, and we started covering UVA sports again in 2005 through Augusta Free Press. And boy, just explain to people way back in those old days. It feels like so many, it was 15 years ago now, but where's your paper? Do you have a magazine? Where can I see you in print? there is no print. So I was kind of a hybrid between the old and the new, because I had worked for about 10 years in mainstream news before we started Augusta Free Press. So yeah, it's interesting. So we've talked public health, we've talked event protocol, we've talked some media criticism. One thing I wanted to ask about, okay, so you're there, the crowd's not as loud, but I can imagine there one thing that's very different covering a NASCAR race in person versus watching it on TV is the sound of, I guess you didn't have 38 at one time, you had 21 or 22, and then you had 20. But the sound of those vehicles driving around a track, not just the sound, the feeling that comes up from the ground. How was it for you, your first race in 2020? It's been a while since you've been at a track. You were supposed to have been back at Bristol back in the spring. What was that like for you to kind of just feel that race there in person?
Oh, when they came out and when they finally activated, you know, and they finally, the command was given by the governor of Tennessee to start their engines. You know, here it went. It just like goosebumps stood up on the back of my neck again. It was just one of those things of we're back to racing. And then as they came around the track and the warm up, it really didn't hit me too much. But buddy, when they hit that start finish line and they started, that's when things really just like, man, we're here. This is the All-Star race. I can't believe it. Even though we only have maybe up to 30,000 people here in the stands, it still sounds just as loud as it does when there's zero people there, or 20 to 22,000 people, or 150 to 160,000. It's loud. It's loud inside that Coliseum. There's no doubt about it. And even though I'm behind glass in that suite, I can still hear it. I can still feel the rumble from where I'm at. I'm a little bit from where I was last night. I was kind of perched out a little bit over the crowd, and you just feel the vibration just coming up. I was sitting there in one of the chairs that they had, and I had the iPad up, and I was typing in a little bit of the story and putting some information together to get it ready. And you can just feel the rumble when they come by. And even though they were running some clean laps, you just feel the rumble of 20 some cars, really just, you know, the vibration of it just coming through there into the suite. And I know it's not as exhilarating as maybe being down there on the track, but hey, I had a whole new vantage point from what I normally have. And I like that vantage point last night just as well as I do when I'm down in the infield.
That's awesome. Well, I'm glad that was able to happen for you. Now, let's actually talk about the racing. There was the Open, which was the opportunity for drivers who had not qualified automatically to be in the All-Star race to qualify by winning one of the three stages. Also, a fan vote was going to determine the fourth of the additional entrants. One person who was presumed to be a fan favorite, I'm not sure I missed how the fan vote went, would have been Bubba Wallace. He got knocked out early, though, and then there was controversy afterwards in regards to how he handled that situation post-race. Talk about that, if you would.
Well, Bubba Wallace talked with Matt Yoakam from Fox Sports 1, and I think one of the comments that came across was you know, it was something about respect. That was the first thing that he issued about Michael McDowell. And, you know, I watched the replay several times. It was, to me, it was jockeying for position was what it was. I don't think there was any malice intended by the whole thing. But, you know, he pretty much, Bubba Wallace came out. It was almost as if there was an arrogance being kind of put on exhibition right there, being talked about there following that wreck. And he got there and he made comments that I thought kind of crossed the line on some things too. Michael McDowell, I will say this, it may not be everybody's cup of tea, but Michael McDowell is a pretty devout Christian. He says, you know, I don't want to hear this crap come across my email, things having to do with prayer and all these other things. And after I heard Bubba get through this stuff, you know, and saying, you know, he pretty much stupid, or he was an idiot, the way he kind of described it. And I'm paraphrasing there. I came away with a little bit less respect for Bubba Wallace last night. And the reason why I say that is if you are going to be the face of NASCAR, so to speak, and getting that minority message out, sometimes you're going to have to bite your tongue. You don't want to say some things, and you do want to say some things sometimes. But last night was one of those times that I didn't think that he really needed to come right out and just attack a fellow driver like he did. This was one of those drivers that came up to him just as much as they did that one race down at Talladega. they embraced him and everything else. And I know it was for $1 million last night, but if you're trying to make an example or be an example, so to speak, or a role model in that way, there's things you've got to watch what you say. And I think Bubba Wallace, I don't think he held back last night. I think he should have. He probably should have been at least a little bit more, more picky in the words of his choice of what he wanted to say last night.
You know, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt, at least until he's all of a sudden in the spotlight. He's a young driver who has not gotten in the spotlight because he's won. He's there because of lots of other reasons. And all of a sudden, you go from being sort of the back of the pack guy and you're working your way up, and he's driving for a team that's not very well funded. And now he's got a lot of fans. He's much more popular than a guy maybe who would otherwise be driving a 43 car. And so he's all of a sudden he's got microphones in his face, and he's got a lot more questions than he used to get. And it's part of the learning process is how to deal with, being under that kind of scrutiny. I mean, you know, you think about other guys who drive in the spot right now he's driving in NASCAR, and they don't get the questions he gets. And so that's part of the learning process. And I will say this too. I think I would bet in the garages there in NASCAR, nobody wants to be the guy to knock Bubba Wallace out of a race. Right. Just like back in the day, you didn't want to be the guy to knock a Dale Earnhardt Sr. or Dale Earnhardt Jr. or Jeff Gordon out of a race, because that's going to put a target on your back. And so, it looked like there was just some jockeying, a little sloppy driving, but certainly no malice in that. It was an accident, and accidents happen.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I think the way that you've looked at it and everything about, you know, the mics in front of you and so forth, and then the jockeying for position. And, you know, it was about midway through or at least close to it, in that section of the race. And it might have been right toward the very end when that contact happened and when that ended up happening. And Wallace had moved up in the field. Wallace was contending for, you know, at least the top two, top three spots in there while he was running. And then I know you've got that, and you say that to yourself, you're in the top three, I've got to watch what I'm doing. But it's like everything else they teach you about driving and defensive driving and driver's ed, it's not you have to worry about, it's the other guy. And that's exactly what happened in this case. And things happen. I mean, things happen quick. And, you know, that's coming from somebody that rode around the track with Darrell Waltrip. And Darrell Waltrip said to me almost 2 years ago, he said, things happen at Bristol quick. And he says, you're on top of this wheel for 500 laps. He says, you're not reclining back like you are at Talladega. He says, here you are, you're approaching 120 down the straight stretch there in the front stretch, and then you're going into one. And you're trying to lay off on the brake a little bit, and you don't want to spin out because you're going into high degree banking at that point. And he says, you know, it's a rough place to drive. And I think for anybody last night, it was a rough place. There were people that were banging the wall. Matt DiBenedetto last night, he was running pretty good for the Wood Brothers last night, brushed the wall, and that kind of did him in for the rest of the All-Star race. Although he came back and it looked like he was going to make a run, he'd had just enough damage done to his car that he was not going to get back out on the be back in the top 10, at least, so to speak.
Talk about Chase Elliott now. He had the dominant run. He won stages 2 and 3. He ends up being your overall winner. What a night for him. And then I got to watch, he stayed on the TV after seeing him talk to Fox Sports 1, also addressing the crowd. Seemed like he had a lot of fans out there in the crowd rooting for him and cheering him on after he won. Talk about Chase Elliott's night.
Well, for Chase Elliott, it was a big night because it really didn't dawn on him until somebody had talked to him, I guess, during the race or after the race and said, you know, if you pull this off, there's only one other father-son duo that has pulled this off in NASCAR history, and that is winning the All-Star race. And the first one to do it was Dale Earnhardt Sr. and Dale Earnhardt Jr. Bill Elliott did it back in 1986, and he did it at Atlanta at the only other change that was on the ever in the All-Star race. And so here, what does Chase Elliott do? He pulls off a win in the first race since that time. All of them have been at Charlotte, and he pulls off a win right there on a track that's outside of Charlotte and wins the All-Star Open or the All-Star race. And it was a big night for him. A lot of people might think that, well, it sounded like it might have been scripted, a Cinderella story, so to speak. It may have been, but I'm telling you, I think he sandbagged a little bit. I think he knew he had a good car last night. He just didn't want to push that car, and he was trying very hard to keep that car out of trouble last night. Ryan Blaney was doing much of the same thing. Ryan Blaney was the one that I thought was going to really take off and do something with it. And then when they named Clint Bowyer as the fan choice, I kind of was in the press box and I kind of said, you know, Clint Bowyer could really make things rough for some people before this race is over with. He's done it at Martinsville, you know, going three wide, and he might push in there and try to go four wide into one of those turns. He could cause a wreck. But, you know, Ryan Blaney kind of he had a good car that was hard to beat during the night. Eric Almirola ran well in the open. They just didn't make enough changes that was going to be able to reflect that out in the on the racetrack as the race went on for the All-Star race. The same thing goes for, you know, the other winners that came through. Clint Bowyer, I thought Clint Bowyer might be a better, you know, like I said, a better target to kind of come through with this. And he wasn't much of a factor in this. And so you had those, and Matt DiBenedetto, he had that trouble. So, you know, some of these cars just didn't end up doing as well as they thought. Kyle Busch was very vocal about it last night following the race. He wasn't too happy. He just felt like that was a track that they should have done something with and they should have been able to do something with. Heck, his brother Kurt, you know, he was picked to be one of the contenders for the All-Star race. He had his troubles early on too. I think he spun there coming out of two going into the backstretch, and he never really made much of a difference during the night. But back to Chase Elliott, I think it was a well-deserved shot in the arm for Chase Elliott for their racing endeavors this season, because things have been dominated any way you want to look at it across by Stewart Haas Racing with Kevin Harvick and also with Brad Keselowski, and the way that they've been running at Penske. It's been tough this year. And so it was a good win for Chevrolet last night. It was a good win for Chase Elliott, good win for Hendrick Motorsports. And now they get ready for Texas this weekend.
Texas this weekend. I was going to ask about, have you seen the schedule down the road? Is there another Bristol race on the schedule this season?
Bristol will come up in September. And that will be, as of right now, the way the schedule is standing, it will be during the playoff part. And so that's when we'll be back, hopefully, in September, and some of these things will hopefully be laxed back a little bit more, allowing the fans to be able to go. I mean, hey, look, we're talking at Texas this weekend. Texas is not going to have any fans at all. Bristol was lucky enough for being in the close confines that they had to have 20 or 22,000 people. And that kind of lends me to this one thing about the way that it was publicized in some of the other media. I mean, for our area down here, this was a big thing of whether or not Bristol Motor Speedway, NASCAR, and everybody else could pull off a COVID-19, quote-unquote, sporting event with a crowd, making sure that there is testing being done, making sure that people are practicing social distancing and wearing the mask. From at least what I saw, I think they did a great job. But a lot of people, I'm just telling you, they were bitter almost to the very point on some of the social media sites that I saw. Enough about this. Why did all these crazy people come out to Bristol? I'll tell you why we came out to Bristol. We wanted to see some racing. We're tired of sitting at home. We're tired of sitting in front of the computer. Some of us wanted to get out and enjoy some racing last night, and that's what I did. I don't know how everybody else feels about it, but, you know, if I want to take that chance, I'm going to take that chance, and that's what I did. I had an opportunity, and I wasn't going to pass it up.
The 5% of us who make up the 50% of people on social media who complain about everything, their voices are louder because of the echo chamber that is social media. They can stay in their houses all they want, I guess. And it sounds like, so your assessment is, and I'm glad to hear it, the assessment is that Bristol did a great job, and hopefully it's something that the other sports leagues can learn from, and you know, take the good lessons from and work themselves this fall and winter.
Yeah, well, that's what Scott Cooper and I were talking about last night. Scott Cooper said, right now, as you look at this whole thing with NASCAR and how they've been able to get the sport back on the track in starting in May up until this point, this is kind of a good bellwether, or at least an idea for other sports, how they are going to get their teams or how they're going to get their programs back into working order. Now, the NFL was brought up. We were talking about the NFL last night. we may not see a whole lot of crowds in the NFL if they decide to go through with starting in September, if they get everything going. You may not see crowds of the Washington, who knows, Redskins, or whoever it's going to be, or the Carolina Panthers, or whoever. You may not see those crowds in there. But then they're looking at NASCAR, of how NASCAR has pulled something like this off. And, yeah, there may be some people that get sick out of this. I know it's taking a chance. It's a risk we take, and I'm sorry, it's a risk we take every day when I step out of my house. Gosh knows if I'm not going to be hit by a truck that's been a runaway on my subdivision where I live at, come through and hit me and knock me over. And it's just like I was always explained to when I was younger and stuff, you know, just always be prepared for anything that could possibly happen. And that's kind of the way life is. And sometimes it seems like we've forgotten what life is really all about. It's a game of chances.
It is. I looked up actuarial tables the other day. Your chances of choking while you're eating dinner here in a few minutes are as good as they are to die from COVID. So I'm not trying to scare you into not eating. Eat. <What? laughs> But I'm just, you know, everything you do is a chance. And hey, I'm so glad, Rod, that you got to be there last night. And I'm also jealous of the fact that you were there last night. But hey, I'm more happy than I am jealous, but it's pretty close. Well, thanks.
I was just glad it was an opportunity. It was an opportunity that I just felt like, and I think I told you this the last time when we talked Tuesday, that, you know, this was an opportunity you couldn't pass up, just to see what was going to happen. And, you know, there were a lot of limited media outlets there. There were some people still doing this stuff from either sitting in their office or sitting at home. And I considered it a privilege to be there and everything. And they've been good to us. I'm not going to deny that. I know that the media, sometimes they kind of question of whether or not people or how a organization like a professional or a college or whatever it might be, they question how things are operated on. I go in there just to report a story. I go in there to find out why this is popular, why this driver won this particular race. I'm not in there critiquing people on the way that they do things. And I have to say this about Bristol Motor Speedway. They have been above and beyond the most professional organization and probably nicest bunch to work with that I have worked with in a long time in the media world. And so, you know, that's kudos to Bristol Motor Speedway. And I think they deserve a lot of credit for that. And they always want to make sure that everybody gets to see a show. And I tell you, that's what we got to see last night. It may not have been very thrilling, the 15-lap shootout, but I'm telling you, they did a good job of hosting everybody last night and taking care of people.
Well, Rod, we're proud as peaches that you represented. You carried the Augusta Free Press flag into the NASCAR All-Star Race and planted it right there. Thank you for doing that. And we'll talk to you again next week. We'll talk about Texas and get folks ready for the rest of the season. But thanks again for your time, and safe travels to you.
All right. Appreciate it, Chris. Thanks.